Hello, I'm Martins Rock, Policy and Advocacy Associate here at the Alliance for Excellent Education. Thank you and welcome for joining us here today at this webinar. Today, I will be your moderator for what will be a very exciting discussion on the research, design, and implementation of an approach to learning called connected learning. Connecting learning is a framework for learning that draws upon the power of technology to connect young people's interests, peer interactions, and social networks without regard for where the learning takes place. With the support from the MacArthur Foundation, this webinar will introduce you to this innovative way of engaging students with the goal of increased academic success. If you've been following the Alliance, you know we are deeply invested in how technology can positively impact learning environments for students and educators. In fact, earlier this year, we hosted the second annual Digital Learning Day, where we highlighted and celebrated educators across the country who are successfully and effectively using technology in their instructional practices. Today, our panelists will help explain the connected learning framework, including the research behind this approach, but they will also discuss what it looks like in a school. Let's meet them. First, we have Mizuko Mimi Ito, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation Chair in Digital Media and Learning. As cultural anthropologist of technology use, Mimi examines young people's use of media technology and has explored how digital media is changing relationships, identities, and communities. Mimi is the research director at the Digital Media and Learning Research Hub and professor at the University of California, Irvine, in the Department of Anthropology, Education, and Informatics. Next, we have Craig Watkins, an associate professor at the University of Texas, Austin, in the Departments of Radio, Television, Film, Sociology, and the Center for African American Studies. His latest book, The Young and the Digital, What the Migration to Social Network Sites, Games, and Anytime, Anywhere Media Means for Our Future, Craig addresses issues that range from the social impact of young people's participation in digital media culture to the educational implications. We also have Katie Salen, who is a game designer, animator, and executive director of the Institute of Play, a nonprofit learning design studio that bases its work on the principles of games and play. Katie is also professor in the DePaul University College of Computing and Digital Media Department and focuses on emerging trends, design, and media. Katie is a designer of Quest to Learn, a public school that serves students grades 6 through 12 in New York. Quest to Learn encourages hands-on problem solving and is designed to promote learning of 21st century skills. Last but not least, we have Elise Edmond Adal, the Director of National Programs and Site Development Program at the National Writing Project. Elise oversees national learning networks and professional development programs for nearly 200 university-based local writing projects. Elise is dedicated to improving the teaching of writing by helping educators understand the changing nature of the discipline in a digital age and the writing revolution taking place in the 21st century. Thank you all for joining us. We also want to hear from you, our webinar viewers. To ask us a question, use the form below this video window. We will turn to those questions from time to time throughout the webinar. You can also follow the conversation on our Twitter by following us at twitter.com/allfored or using the hashtag ConnectedLearning, which is at the bottom of your screen. As many of you know, the Alliance for Excellent Education's mission is to ensure that every child graduates prepared for post-secondary learning and success in life. Achieving that mission requires a lot, including engaging students. We do not need massive amounts of data and research to tell us that engaged students are more likely to learn and have better educational and life outcomes. Policymakers and educators across the country are seeking effective approaches to how best to engage students. One very promising approach to this is through the use of technology combined with students' interests. The Alliance's efforts to promote the effective use of technology in and outside the classroom are couched in a broader vision of helping all students, without regard for their socioeconomic background or geography, achieve success in college and career. So the Alliance is very inspired by the promise of connected learning approach and excited to introduce it to many of you. Now, without further ado, let's hear from our panelists. Mimi, we'll start with you.
Thanks so much for that introduction, Martin. So I would like to start off this discussion by talking a little bit about the origins of the connected learning model in research that the MacArthur Foundation has been supporting now for many years. One of the projects that I helped lead several years ago was really looking very broadly at how young people were taking up new media technologies, primarily in out-of-school context, specifically gaming, social media, and digital media production tools. And we were really trying to understand the innovative uses of technology in relation to learning that young people were really innovating and driving in their own interest-based and social activities. And we found in this study, which was really the largest ethnographic study of its kind, that young people were learning a tremendous amount through their informal, peer-based, and interest-driven learning with new technology. But we also found that it was really only a small minority of young people who were really exploiting the new kinds of opportunities for accessing information, for social connection, for accessing new forms of expertise, and forms of digital media production and sharing that these new tools were offering. So coming out of this ethnographic work, we really tried to delve deeply into what was it that those young people who were being really successful in mobilizing these new opportunities, how were they learning online? What were the kinds of supports they were getting in order to further their learning? These were young writers who were part of fan fiction communities, youth activists who took to MySpace, Facebook, or YouTube to organize for causes, or, for example, a young web developer who looked to online communities and resources and tutorials in order to become a successful web developer and digital media artist. We really learned that these young people were often exceptionally well-motivated, often came from families with supports for technology and high educational attainment already. But we also really believe that many more young people can have access to these kinds of specialized, interest-driven learning opportunities that allow for higher-order learning building on the basics that all young people need to have in order to really thrive and be successful in today's digital and networked age. And so the connected learning model is really asking the question of how can we use the new opportunities that new media are providing to have information at your fingertips, to be able to connect with others who have expertise and who share interests, to be able to publish and share and get recognition in new kinds of online environments. How can we take these opportunities to make this kind of higher order learning available to many more young people? So connected learning really isn't about a specific technology or a platform or a technique, but it's really asking the question of what is the experience for the learner and what are the kinds of social relationships, experiences, access to knowledge and communities that young people need to have to really thrive in an era where these forms of information and social connection are very abundant. Connected learning is when a young person is pursuing knowledge and expertise around something that they care deeply about, that's relevant to them and their communities, where they're supported by friends and institutions who share and recognize this common passion or purpose. And we really believe that if young people can have these experiences, that it really nurtures a disposition for problem solving, for inquiry, that is a lifelong learning disposition that young people really need to thrive in an era of rapid technological change where people really need to be able to be effective learners, to be flexible in their careers and how they pursue opportunities. And so the MacArthur Foundation and the Digital Media and Learning Initiative has really coalesced around some of these ideas of connected learning as a way of bringing together some of what we're seeing in the research space and a lot of interesting innovations in practice, in technology design, that really integrate a tight feedback loop between some of the basic research we've been doing on how young people are learning and the kinds of outcomes of that learning, and an effort to design new kinds of learning environments that really broaden access to the learning experiences we're hoping to support.
Great. Thank you, Mimi. Next, we will hear from Elise.
Well, thank you. Well, actually, just to build on Mimi, one of the things that I'm connected with in the National Writing Project is a network of really extraordinary educators across the country. And when they saw the kinds of research that came out of the ethnography that Mimi talked about, I have to say there was a way that it made tremendous sense. It named a moment, I think, that many educators are feeling right now. And that's that we're working with young people at a time when actually there's tremendous abundance. Abundance of research, abundance of information, abundance of opportunity. And actually the same digital tools that give us this information abundance also gives everybody, including students, tremendous opportunity to create, to make, to circulate their writing, their media production, everything that they do. So there's something about this moment that feels qualitatively different for so many educators and young people. And it has to do with this 24/7, always on, everywhere available abundance of opportunities. It's not a moment now where in a community, in order to do deep work together, let's say young people and their teachers or their mentors have to get the librarian to open up the library, to hold it open late, get somebody else to unlock the door, to an opportunity in so many places, because actually the internet's never locked. It's always unlocked. So rethinking, being able to rethink what it would mean to be able to educate young people in the midst of this abundance of learning opportunity, so that not just a small number of young people, but large numbers of young people are able to navigate and do productive, higher order work in this new environment we have. So the research made tremendous sense, and it opened up some opportunities to design practice differently. And I would just name a couple, and we could talk about them later in the broadcast. One is, it opens up the question of how we all learn for ourselves and help young people learn how to navigate pathways through this abundance. How, in fact, to find, use, curate, act on the opportunities that are out there. And these pathways are not going to be necessarily determined by any one institution. It's not going to be the pathway through your schedule in school, perhaps, or the pathway that is owned by just the library or the museum. But we can actually have pathways that cut across a whole number of learning opportunities and institutions. That's a new way for us to think, and it's very exciting to imagine this phrase that we say a lot in education, it takes a village. It takes a village to educate a child. Well, this actually is a little bit about how the village can work together and understand how learners can cut a pathway through all the learning opportunities that the village might offer. So it's kind of an exciting time. It's a model that actually gives, in addition to naming this challenge and the set of opportunities, gives some guidance to educators about a couple of things that they may want to move forward on in order to take advantage of the tremendous opportunity that we have now. And just to say, this pathway notion, this notion that learning happens anywhere, not just in school, but can leverage the home and the family, can leverage other learning institutions, libraries, museums. You can find mentors, not only in your local place, but at a great distance through the internet. How do we deliver on that? How do we involve the community in actually being able to use this tool to put greater connections in front of young people? So quick example, an example from Oakland, California. We were working with the school district, a number of partners working with the school district to see what it would be like actually to take really core, important academic outcomes, common core aligned academic outcomes, and imagine what it would be like for a larger number of partners to work on creating learning opportunities for young people, diverse ones, for them to pursue this important work. So we have a concept there that we're working out where we try to look at what it would mean for a young person to be, of course, college ready and career ready, very important, but also community ready. in terms of a civic engagement with his or her community. So in some ways, civic engagement or real college and career readiness, let's say, at the most profound level, is going to take you outside the four walls of your school. How do you create a set of opportunities so that the community-based learning institutions, the wonderful clubs that do great work for young people, especially in civic engagement, local government and the youth leadership opportunities they want to put in it out there, the youth media providers that might be working with young people about how they could be creators of writing and media and film in terms of a civic purpose. How do those folks network so that young people in schools in Oakland, California can be matched with opportunities that fit them and cut a pathway through them that still leverages the really important academic work we want them to learn? We're looking at a system of badges, for example, where young people can take on challenges, again, very compatible with the Common Core and what they ask for, take on challenges, but actually perform them in the classroom, outside of the classroom, in a summer program, in an after-school program, and be recognized for moving forward in these important skills, but also being able to do it in a way that is shared more broadly than just the school.
Great, thank you. Well, thanks, Elise. Katie, we'll hear from you now.
Great, so I'm going to continue some of the threads that Mimi and Elise started, and I'm going to talk specifically about the story of one student in a public school that we've opened in New York called Quest to Learn. The school was designed to support connected learning, especially around the idea of increasing student engagement by making learning relevant through the support of interests and connections to real work and real life. The school uses the tools of our connected age, online platforms and communities, digital tools, games, and other media to link learning in school, home, and the community so that learning is reinforced and supported in multiple settings. So as Elise was talking about there, we're really interested in the idea of how we can support a young person across these multiple contexts. The school has a strong focus on what we call connected community, which is helping students and educators develop experiences and identities as collaborators, experts, and mentors for others that are taking part in the community in which they're learning. The student I'm going to profile here, his name is Charles. He's a ninth grader at Quest to Learn. He came in as a sixth grader, so he's been with us for 4 years. Is a great example of connected learning in action. So let's take a look at his story.
My name is Charles Rabin, and I'm a ninth grader at Quest to Learn. June 14th, 2011, I published my first photo. I take photos of a large range of things, and what I love so much about portraiture is that I'm able to communicate that everyone is unique and everyone is beautiful in their own way, and just trying to say how special we all are. I see it as a system, and everyone's voice is a component. And once you start to take away the components, the system starts to fail. And systems thinking is amazing. It enables you to look at really big problems and just simplify them. I think learning can happen anywhere. It doesn't always have to happen in school. Learning can happen on the internet. It can happen outside on a walk. It can happen with friends, with family. It can happen anywhere. Jerry is a 64-year-old man who has owned the Astor Place newsstand for the past 25 years of his life. Now the city is trying to take it away from him. When I got home after hearing Jerry's story, I immediately went to change.org, a website that I use quite often for signing petitions, and I thought I might create my own. I feel a responsibility. I don't know why, honestly, but I feel a need to do something. And it takes like 30 seconds of my time. I mean, one signature. It's really not that much effort, but if we all put in 30 seconds and a click of a button, then we really can make a lot of change. And that's why I say that, you know, that there's so many of us and we can really get a lot done together. I just always get really excited going home and looking at my petition and seeing, you know, even if just I had one more signer, it makes me happy to see that one person thought of my petition and said, hey, you know what, I think I want to help out. I want to see this change happen. I like to take charge of my own learning. That means educating myself, learning what I want to learn outside of school because of an interest that I want to know more about.
Wow, that was great, Katie.
Yeah, so one thing that we like about, the stories that are coming out of the school is that, in some sense, it tells us a lot about the aspirations of connected learning. So here's a kid that came into our school as a pretty average student, but he had lots of interests, but no real means to pursue them. But through a connection with adults in the school, through teachers and also through game designers that work in the school, one in particular who had a passion for photography, Charles began to build skills and make connections within his local community. He was then able to take advantage of online platforms that were sort of out there in the wild to share his work, get feedback, and ultimately to mobilize people around the civic cause or even sets of civic causes that he cared about. And one thing I did want to note that even though Quest to Learn was a project designed from the very beginning to support connected learning, what we're finding through the research and through the examples that both Mimi and Elise gave is that the principles of connected learning can really be applied to already existing programs. So with some very small changes, existing programs can move toward a stronger alignment with the connected learning model. And this is for us, I think, a really exciting moment as it means that connected learning is really doable by a diverse group of stakeholders.
Great. Well, thank you, Katie. Craig?
Thank you. First of all, Martin, thank you for having us here to talk about connected learning and just have this conversation with you. Earlier this year, we published a white paper on connected learning. And in that paper, we sort of mapped out some design and learning principles. And sort of what Katie was talking about, it's kind of like a toolkit, right, and a set of principles and guidelines that one might be able to put into action to really realize some of the goals and just the vision of connected learning. And there are a number of principles, but one that I'll focus on in terms of my brief opportunity here is this idea around sort of students being producers and makers of things. And we believe that one of the important sort of elements or components of connected learning is this idea of creating learning spaces and opportunities for kids to realize themselves as producers of information, producers of artifacts, producers of ideas. This idea of in some ways, it kind of aligns very well with what's currently being referred to as kind of like the maker movement, right? And this idea that, right, to the extent that we create opportunities and pathways for kids to sort of see themselves as designers and makers and creators, sort of architects of their own information and cultural environment, that really empowers them in ways that schools traditionally just have not been able to do. And so we see that sense of agency and that sense of empowerment, a young person sort of realizing him or herself in a way that school perhaps doesn't allow them to realize is something that connected learning offers sort of as a vision, as a new intervention, as a way of kind of rethinking and reimagining what education and learning might look like. So from our perspective, a lot of that early research that Mimi sort of referenced and talked about, what comes out of that work and work subsequent to that is, given the kinds of social and digital and sort of mobile tools that kids have access to now, kids are already doing these things. They're already making, they're already creating, they're writing, they're authoring, they're building. And so they see themselves as designers. They see themselves as makers outside of any kind of formal institutional setting. And wouldn't it be terrific if schools could begin to leverage that kind of disposition to design, that disposition to make? And we think that those are some of the principles and some of the opportunities that connected learning pathways provide. And so for the last year or so, we've been embedded in a school in Austin, a high school in Austin, that comes with many of the kinds of attributes that we typically associate with kind of big urban or kind of urban fringe schools. A number of the kids, come from low-income households, low-income families. They're kind of, labeled as at risk or disadvantaged, and we try to problematize some of those terms in our research. But what's interesting, right, is what are both sort of the barriers and the opportunities for connected learning in environments like that. So you've got teachers and you've got principals and you've got administrators working against all of these kinds of obligations in terms of, preparing students for tests and, just the kinds of traditional curriculum that often impose, certain kinds of restrictions on students. But what we found really interesting, right, are those students who have been able to kind of navigate the school and the after-school setting to build these kind of connected learning pathways. So the ways in which they're connecting what they're doing in their classes with some of their interests outside of the kind of formal learning environment. So we had an opportunity, for example, to be more specific, students who were involved in after-school digital media club. And through that club, they were able to create social media projects and campaigns, a short film that they submitted to an international film festival. Around that, they created a whole sort of social media kind of advocacy project around the work that they were doing. And there was one student in particular named Alberto who struck us as just really a striking example of what connected learning might look like in an environment like this. So here was someone who had really kind of struggled to kind of find his voice and to find his space within the sort of traditional school environment. And like a number of other students, Alberto just really talked about the degree to which he felt, kind of unrecognized in school, the degree to which there was a certain amount of demotivation, disinterest in school. But it was really through those kind of connected learning opportunities outside of school that he began to kind of realize, right, his own voice, his own presence, to really kind of fashion an identity that connected him back to the school in a really important way. And so we think that connected learning also speaks to this issue of equity. And when we begin to think about, digital media, we hear a lot about the digital divide and access to technology, but it's really about access to the opportunities and pathways to leverage the technology in more meaningful kinds of ways, for young people to begin to develop those kinds of dispositions, to cultivate those skills that allow them to use technology in ways that enable them to design, to make, I would argue, right, to intervene in the world around them. And that's really what's important. So what Elise is referring to in terms of community engagement, sort of civic engagement, community impact, I mean, those are the kinds of things that connected learning, I think, really speaks to. And if you think about, a generation of kids who are growing up in dropout factories, again, because they're demotivated, because schools don't recognize their interests, don't recognize what they could potentially be good at, and how do you sort of create opportunities for kids to excel, to find their voice, to find their way within educational settings, I think connected learning really offers and provides that opportunity. Right, because it starts with, what are kids interested in? What motivates you? How can we connect with you? How can we recognize things that you're good at, things that you're passionate about, and sort of build those into what we do in the classroom setting, in the educational setting? And to the extent that connected learning is in part designed to kind of speak to that. So we talk about the three R's, right? There's arithmetic, writing, and reading. But we think there's a fourth R, too, and that is the idea of relevance. And so how do you make education, how do you make learning relevant to young people? And we think that connected learning is a pathway to doing that.
Great. Well, thank you, Craig. I'm delighted to be joined by four very smart and passionate people who are dedicated to using the power and promise of technology. I want to remind our viewers that they can ask a question to us at any of our panelists at any time using the form below this video window. Before we get to our viewer questions, I want to ask a couple of questions of my own, if you don't mind. Elise, you said connected learning draws from the best of past learning theories like the Montessori or Dewey, and yet it is designed for our times. Can you say some more about how it can be both?
Yeah, thank you. I think we have a tremendous repository of great wisdom in education. We're not talking about the need to completely reinvent an entirely new model that's never been thought about before in the educational community. And actually, we have some great predecessors. If you think about, for example, someone like Dewey, or someone like Maria Montessori, both of whom developed their educational approaches and practices at, in some ways, a similar moment, a moment of tremendous change from an agrarian model to an industrial model, a moment like now when people would say, we can't really predict what the jobs of the future are going to be. The way that we educated before may not prepare young people for the society that they're going into. This was true at the turn of the previous century, as it is true now. And they all developed approaches that actually have some amazing similarities with what we're talking about here with connected learning. One is an emphasis on the learner and developing the learner's capacity to do something, to navigate, to build, to create, to operate in a world that can't be fully understood today. So you have to invest in that learner as a lifelong learner in the deepest sense. They also valued very much interest because they understood that in all of those cases, Dewey in school or a Montessori education, that we need a young learner to really invest in taking something deep, in following something to a full course. And you really get that when someone's interested and invested in an outcome. So how, in fact, when we get some interest, can we create an opportunity for a learner, perhaps with his or her peers, to really follow it in depth and learn what can only be learned by taking something deep. So there's much that actually they talk about from that period of time that has informed educational practice from great teachers and mentors across the country. What they didn't have, of course, is the power of the internet. So in some ways, if you can imagine what it would have been like for a Dewey in school or Maria Montessori or Jane Addams or any of those great educators, if they had the internet, that's in some ways what we can talk about now. We have in some ways the opportunity to take some of those visions which just have made sense to so many educators and actually act on them in a way that was not possible for those educators. And I would say just one other thing, that was the piece of technology that they had at that point, from the agrarian to the industrial model, as we've talked about in education. They had that industrial model. They had kind of Fordism in a way. Mm-hmm. They could build schools, they could build libraries, they could manufacture books and ship them out across the country. They could build a more equitable system in that way at that time. What we're talking about now is actually a next step forward in being able to act on the same disposition to equity. We now have a much more powerful tool. It operates a bit differently than that industrial model. It operates according to the logic of the internet. But just like that era, it gives us a new set of tools to be able to put within reach of any learner a set of experiences that were not there for him or her recently, just a few years ago. So in some ways, that's why we say connected learning is take some of the best of what we've understood about creating great conditions for learning, but gives us an opportunity to update it and make it possible actually to speak to young people who live in that new world from the moment they start picking up those devices and plugging into the internet at home. So we have that same opportunity right now.
And in speaking about learning theories of our time, Mimi, what distinguishes connected learning from other technology-based approaches such as blended learning, the flipped classroom, Khan Academy, and others?
Thanks, Martin. I think that is an excellent question and one that we get asked a lot, because I think there's so many new learning approaches that are being put out there now with the advent of new technology. I think what Elise has described is really a good frame for understanding what defines connected learning and makes connected learning unique, which is really that it is an approach to learning that is built on a lot of longstanding values around learning that is about relevance, about social connection, about building connections to opportunity in the real world. And it asks the question of how can we use new technology in the service of those kinds of learning experiences and in the service of broadening access to opportunity. So really putting the learning experience and the equity issue at the forefront has been the defining feature of connected learning. And I think in terms of specific technology platforms, techniques, devices, all of these approaches and educational techniques can be used in the service of connected learning. I think the reason why we lead with our learning values and philosophy is based on research that we know that when new technologies and new educational techniques are deployed in the absence of this broader social and values framework, that they tend to reinforce the privilege of communities who already have access to progressive or highly technology leveraged kinds of learning experiences. And that's why in our framework we've really foregrounded those social and cultural dimensions of learning.
Great. Thanks, Katie. One of our viewers wants to know what connected learning looks like in a school. Katie, what's been the most exciting part of implementing connected learning in Quest to Learn schools, and what's also been challenging about it?
Sure. It's always fantastic to talk about the framework in terms of opportunities and challenges. So one of the, I think, the most exciting things that we've seen in the school is that it connected learning actually invites in a whole group of people to participate and support the lives of young people. So in the case of the Quest schools, we have folks that have been trained as professional game designers that are in the school working with the kids and teachers every day. And that's a group of folks that haven't traditionally sort of been invited into the learning conversation. And in the school, they act as tremendous role models for the young people in the school, partially because they're not that far distant in their age. They're sort of in their 20s and early 30s. They're providing for kids sort of models of what it looks like to pursue a passion and what the sort of day-to-day work looks like of making these kind of connections between interests you have and what your day-to-day work life might look like. So that's exciting. We also have seen the real changes in teachers, the educators in the school, because, you know, Craig talked about this notion of the kind of maker community and the identities as designers that kids are taking on. But in Connected Learning, it also frames teachers as kinds of designers and creators that are really tasked with helping kids, you know, make connections to types of pathways that they may have a hand in constructing. And so we've seen in the school really a remarkable change in the identities of our educators who have started to see themselves as designers. And in taking on that identity and the way that kids take on those identities, they become incredibly empowered around their classrooms, around the types of collaborations that they're part of, because collaboration is also a big part of Connected Learning. You know, kids really thriving as their interests are acknowledged, that attention is being paid to helping them make connections between things that might be happening outside of the school and things inside of the school. So all of that is really exciting and, you know, enormous opportunity to make those kinds of things happen. In terms of challenges, you know, Connected Learning does require that one pay attention to connection. So this is a really obvious point, but one that's quite challenging. So it requires one to move out of a kind of siloed mindset where you're thinking about every child as the sort of same, that they need to learn the kind of same set of standards. And you have to start, again, as an educator or another adult in the kind of world of that kid, you have to start to think about, well, how can I pull from that kid a sense of what they're interested in, and then how can I help them translate that interest into different domains, whether that's a social domain, whether it's a civic domain, or an academic domain. So that actually takes some real work and some real skill to figure out how to do. It also, I think, both Mimi and Elise and also Craig talked about just the diversity of resources that are out there, and there's a real challenge in just making sense of everything that is out there, and how do you begin to take diversity and begin to coalesce that into pathways that make sense for kids? And I think that we're just at the beginning of doing that work. Kids show us lots of examples of what pathways might look like, but we also want to start to get a sense of, for kids who don't necessarily know what a pathway might look like, how can we design one for them? And so I think that that's quite a challenging task, just because there are just so many resources and so many opportunities.
Great, thank you. And I know Elise spoke to this just a little bit earlier, just about equity. Craig, what's unique about how Connected Learning addresses issues around social inequity and also the new economy?
Yeah, it's a great question. And any number of ways that I could respond to that, but I think one of them really is this issue of engagement, and I know it's something that we've all alluded to in some way or another, and I know that the Quest to Learn schools are really designed to kind of, you know, pull kids in, right, and to sort of allow them to become engaged and roll up their sleeves and get involved in learning in really kind of meaningful ways. And this is important, particularly around the issue of equity, because if you just look at the history of the challenges that we've had in this country and educating and engaging young learners who sort of fall into social and economic margins, you know, one of the issues has quite frankly been, you know, engaging them in ways that are relevant, engaging them in ways that are compelling, in ways that allow them to sort of see opportunities and pathways that make school meaningful to them in a kind of credible way. So, you know, a lot of the research suggests that, you know, kids simply they're not motivated, you know, by the kinds of skill and drill exercises that become so common in school. And we certainly see, right, in low-income schools, just this hard sort of intense drive and emphasis on testing and preparing kids to pass those tests because of all the kind of standards and accountability measurements that are out there now. And so it puts everybody under the gun, including the students, and it simply just makes school a place where they just would rather not be. And that's why you have these dropout factors that are concentrated in certain areas now. So we see Connected Learning in some ways as a way to kind of reverse that trend and just to create a very different kind of environment, a very different culture, a very different set of opportunities that engage kids in more kind of meaningful ways. Recently, I heard Secretary of State Arne Duncan say that you know, just from his research and going around and speaking with schools and meeting with students, that he thinks one of the big problems is that school is too easy for kids, right, that they're not being challenged. And that's certainly something that we've seen in the school that we were in, right, this sort of low bar of expectations. You know, what's expected for kids to pass to get by are so low that, again, that it fails to really sort of engage kids. And sort of beyond that, as we begin to think about the future, as we begin to think about the ways in which our world and our global kind of information economy is changing, you know, the need to be a lifelong learner, the need to develop sort of the skills and the discipline associated with innovation is just something that's just absolutely critical. And it's something that we see lacking in our schools, and particularly lacking in schools that are sort of charged with the mission of educating and preparing young kids on the social and economic edges, you know, for the economic and digital and sort of political future. And so, you know, there is this sense, right, that we place such an emphasis on cognitive skills, but it's the sort of non-cognitive skills that oftentimes prove to be actually more predictive of future success and opportunity. And if you think about the new economy, right, and the kinds of skills, right, if it's, you know, leadership, if it's communication, if it's the ability to ideate and to innovate and to create and to collaborate, I mean, those are kinds of dispositions and skills that oftentimes get they don't get nourished and really cultivated in school, but yet, you know, research suggests that those skills are incredibly valuable, that those are skills that extend beyond just the 4 years of high school into lifelong learning, and we think that those are the kinds of things that kids will need to sort of not only compete for jobs in this new economy, but really to be viable citizens, to be viable agents in a world that's just changing quite rapidly. And so we think connected learning is really key to helping young people develop those kind of non-cognitive skills that are absolutely critical for the 21st century.
Mimi, what's the case for leveraging the internet, social media, digital media for learning? And how can policymakers either at the federal or state level balance the risks and rewards?
Yeah, that's a great issue. I know that when we did our research, we did find that there was a pretty significant generation gap in how older folks viewed the value and risks of online participation versus young people, where young people tended to really stress the positives, the fact that the internet was a lifeline to learning and to social connection, whereas older folks tended to dwell much more on the potential risks. And I think there's a lot of things we can do in order to you know, minimize risks and maximize opportunity, but I also think it's important to realize one of the things that Sonia Livingstone, our colleague, has done a tremendous amount of research on is that in a lot of ways those risks and opportunities go hand in hand. So if we try to completely eradicate kids' potential for exploration, for connecting with others, for open-ended inquiry in spaces like the internet, then we're also clamping down on the opportunities they have. And in fact, we're entering an era where we can't control young people's access to social connection and information in the ways that we used to. And in fact, we need to cultivate in young people themselves the capacity to make wise choices about where they direct their attention, what kinds of information they access, and what kinds of social relationships are valuable. And of course, we need to do these in developmentally appropriate ways, but we also need to realize that you can't just expect that young people are going to develop these without the opportunity to exercise some autonomy, some level of agency in where they're going to direct their attention. And we need to start cultivating those dispositions possibly earlier in life than, you know, what we may have been accustomed to. And the internet actually allows young people a space where they can explore knowledge, information, social connections in ways that are in many ways much safer than letting kids loose, for example, in an urban environment. And so I think it's very important to keep that in perspective and to also understand that by focusing too much on short-term risks, we are potentially setting kids up for longer-term risks. There's a lot of talk these days about the talent gap, for example, in high-tech jobs, and the fact that young people, even today, who are, you know, really the most educated generation ever, if you look at numbers like college attainment, for some reason are not developing the technical skills, the capacity for creativity and innovation that, for example, Silicon Valley firms are really looking for. And you really have to start asking the question about whether we are giving kids the opportunity to cultivate those dispositions for creativity, innovation, and problem solving earlier in life.
And Mimi, I just got a question from someone in Iowa asking, how does Common Core fit into and interact with connected learning? Can you speak on that at all?
Yeah, I'm happy to speak on that. I think Elise may also be a good spokesperson for this, but we really see connected learning as building on the foundational learning and literacy that young people all really need to achieve. And so it's not an either-or kind of equation, but it's really saying that in today's day and age, really the young people have to be able to do both. They have to both have those foundational literacies and competencies, but also have the ability to be 21st century learners who are constantly, accessing new information, who are able to specialize, who are able to do demand-driven, innovative forms of learning and thinking. But Elise, you may have something else to add on this.
Yeah, that, I completely agree, Mimi. It's not an either-or proposition. And in fact, one of the things that's interesting about the Common Core is that there are some elements of the Common Core that really align with nicely with the principles of connected learning. And I would say, for example, we can point to Common Core anchor standards that are really about navigating the internet, being able to use the internet for research, being able to understand the credibility of information. So there's the living in an information economy element of the Common Core. But even more profound, I think, is that if you really look at the Common Core standards, what you see is a consistent emphasis on production of something by young people. They produce things in writing, they produce things with media, they read and research in order to produce and do something. And a core element of the connected learning framework, Craig spoke to it, is at the center the learner producing something and following the course of that production. So in some ways, I think connected learning gives us tremendous opportunities to achieve the spirit of the Common Core. If you can imagine the standards that ask young people to, for example, investigate an issue of concern, develop an understanding, an argument about it, read more widely, create something that will circulate in the community that they will author and take responsibility for. Connected learning talks about putting that at the center also of the education. So I see them as deeply compatible.
Yep. Absolutely. I agree.
And then also when we're thinking about what connected learning looks like, Katie, is connected learning if it isn't linked to work, civic, school opportunities?
Yeah, so I think one of the preoccupations people have had since we started talking about connected learning is a sense of asking, is this connected learning? Is this not connected learning? In some sense that connected learning is a kind of box that things need to fit into. So the way that I talk about it is that you want to think about connected learning as a very generous framework that at its fullest potential provides opportunities that link civic, work, and school opportunities. And the idea is that these three spheres are really necessary to providing the richest possible set of opportunities for a young person. But they don't have to all occur in equal measure. So even though in our paper there's a diagram, the circles all look equal, in individual kids' experiences, the kind of scale of those circles are going to look different. And the idea is that these three contexts provide different kind of doorways in for young people, so they could enter in through an interest, they could enter in through something that's happening in school, they could enter in through their peer network. And sort of where they go from there is going to look really different from kid to kid and also from program to program. So my advice would be to not be so concerned about trying to say, is what we're doing connected learning to the T? And rather think about what are all of the ways that we can really do our best to try to activate these three spheres in the context of whatever program that you might be developing, whatever school, whatever curriculum, whatever after-school program that you might be working on.
Great, great. Thanks, Katie. And I know, Craig, you spoke a little bit about this before, but President Obama, in his State of the Union address, talked about the need to create a new generation of makers and innovators. How does Connecting Learning align to that call to action?
Yeah, no, I think it was a great pronouncement by the president, and you know, just the ways in which he has supported maker culture and science fairs at the White House, and really sort of spotlighting STEM innovation and kids really who sort of connect to the world in that way, and sort of recognizing and rewarding that is something that's been very powerful. And I think it's something that, again, that connected learning sort of speaks to in a very intrinsic way, insofar as there is this recognition in terms of our research of again, that the fact that kids are already innovators, right? They're already doing these things. If it's through social media, creating YouTube channels, creating games. And so it's really about how do we as adults, how do we as educators, institutional agents, museums, libraries, schools, and how do we begin to recognize that and sort of build spaces that allow kids to continue engaging in those kinds of practices and activities that are keyed more towards, learning how to problem solve, learning how to innovate. And I would argue, learning how to be community agents as well, right? And that these issues are very much aligned with helping empowering kids to be agents of change in their communities. And so, in that sense, I think of Maker in a very generous way, in terms of what it might encompass and what it might represent. But in that sense, I think the president is exactly right, and I think the connected learning principles, the vision of connected learning, again, is really oriented towards recognizing that kids are already sort of predisposed towards designing and building and creating, and how do we begin to perhaps further cultivate that to support that and build the kinds of institutions and connections using technology as a lever, if you will, to further engage them in ways that allow them to sort of meaningfully be in the world, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And just building up upon that, Mimi, some of our viewers have been wondering just what it looks like between, the learning that takes place in places such as libraries and museums and what's recognized in school settings. How do we bridge that gap, and what are those challenges?
I think, the big opportunity that new technology offers is to start bridging those gaps, those barriers between different sites of learning, different institutions of learning. I think the reality is that there are still tremendous barriers for that to happen, just because of the way that institutional accountability work and the ways that practices have historically been defined. I think ideally when we see these things working together, we see the school becoming an environment where young people have access to certain forms of intergenerational connection. They get exposure to new interests, new opportunities, new forms of learning that they wouldn't necessarily just discover on their own through self-exploration. So there's a really important function for schools, not just in providing a baseline of skills and literacy, but also for things like interest discovery, mentorship, intergenerational connection. And ideally, you have that environment, young people engaging with that environment, as well as engaging with environments that are more about self-directed inquiry, that are about specialization, that are about, forms of more play and exploratory kinds of learning that don't necessarily fit within the way that the school day is organized. And so we, in contexts where we see those working very well together, you really have the opportunity for the connected learning to work. But we do know, for example, in the recent research coming out of Pew around libraries that, families really want that connection between schools and public libraries to be stronger, but feel that they're not necessarily there yet. I think librarians have that motivation too, but the practicalities of bridging that learning and making it visible are still very high, and we don't have online environments that create a lot of transparency between the learning that a young people may be doing in an after-school program or in the library or in a museum, we don't, educators don't have visibility into that learning, even though they would want to. And when we find it working, it's generally the self-initiative of the learner or something more serendipitous, like a young person is really into fiction writing and happens to have a great relationship with their English teacher who introduces them to a new course and opportunity in school. And that's happening, but I think the opportunity to break those barriers and make them more visible is really there in more openly networked kinds of environments for online sharing, for visibility, but also for educators to really think about programs, invitations, ways for young people to bring their learning in the informal and out-of-school space into the school space that goes beyond kind of our historical practice of something like show and tell. I think we can do a lot better than that, and I think innovative educators really are starting to work on you know, not just technology-based solutions, but programmatic solutions for getting that to work in an environment where, you know, people are increasingly recognizing that learning happens in all kinds of locations of a young person's life.
Great, thank you. Elise, how is the National Writing Project working with teachers to help take advantage of connected learning approach?
Yeah, and actually it's an opportunity to announce what we hope will be an exciting summer for educators as well. So the National Writing Project, along with some other great partners, the Mozilla Foundation, the MacArthur Foundation, for example, this summer we really want to create an opportunity for, first off, people to experience connected learning themselves. So one thing that we have going on this summer, collectively, a lot of folks working together on something called the Summer of Making and Connecting. A couple of people, Craig in particular, spoke to this making ethos. Well, the summer months are a perfect time for people to get together and try and learn something new, make something on the web, share something, dip into some of these practices of innovation that are very often web-connected and web-powered. If folks go to the Summer of Making and Connecting website, they're going to see literally hundreds and hundreds of opportunities to dip in over the summer to an opportunity to learn and experience some of the culture of connected learning. But more importantly, probably for the audience for this webinar, Katie had talked about how actually connected learning is not a box to be replicated, but it's a series of design principles that could raise for any one of us as educators a question. How can I push something a little more in that direction? How can I take more advantage of this opportunity? Mimi talked about show and tell. How can we actually take a step forward? We can do better than that. So for educators in particular this summer, there'll be a whole host of very special opportunities around a new initiative called Educator Innovator, which is really a connected learning situation for adults, for us to push ourselves to maybe take a step toward a more connected learning environment, whether we're a teacher or a principal or superintendent, whether we're a librarian, a museum educator, we run after school clubs, all of us could look at some of these design principles and say, wow, next year, I think I'm going to push a little bit in this direction. So Educator Innovator is intended to provide a learning environment for the adults, follows the same connected learning principles that let people think about how they could innovate their practice with an eye toward creating these environments where young people get to be innovators and creators and thinkers and doers too.
Great. That sounds exciting.
Yeah, we invite everyone.
Great, great. Well, I'm afraid that we're over time. I want to thank Mimi, Craig, and Elise for joining us today.
Katie, I'm sorry.
And, you know, I want to thank our webinar viewers as well for joining us. Please keep an eye out for future publications and a webinar on this topic in the incoming months. Please visit the links on this webpage below this video to learn more about collective learning and some of the things that we discussed today, like the white paper and this new initiative that the Writing Project is placing forward. To keep up to date on the latest happenings in federal education policy, follow Alliance on Twitter at twitter.com/allfored and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allfored. Have a great afternoon, and thank you again for joining us.